all you're going to need is one large institution to become upside down and not be able to pay, not be able to perform on their derivatives. And that will spread like wildfire. And I don't imagine it'll take more than 48 to 72 hours until everything comes down once the first major entity collapses and defaults.
This is Kaiser Johnson with Liberty in Finance, and this is the Miles Franklin Weekly Special for January 31st through February 7th, 2023, while supplies last. This week we feature 2023 Austrian Silver Philharmonics at just $3.29 over spot per ounce. Frequently regarded as one of the most beautiful sovereign coins, the Austrian Philharmonic portrays instruments from the Vienna Orchestra on one side and the grand pipe organ from the famed Augsburg Golden Hall on the other, all in 3/9 fine pure silver, with a face value of 1.5 euro. These 2023 Philharmonics come 20 to a tube, 500 to a box, are just $3.29 over spot, and are IRA eligible. And if you'd like to learn more about a precious metals IRA, call us, and we'll be happy to help you in that process. Our number for all orders is 1-888-81-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-815-4237. We're available after hours and on weekends, and we look forward to speaking with you. Welcome back to Liberty and Finance. We're always privileged to have this widely followed guest, Bill Holter, with a long list of credentials behind his name, including a long history of understanding what's going on Wall Street, market analyst, used to write for Miles Franklin, partnered with Jim Sinclair on JS Mindset for some time, now starting his own website at billholter.com, joins us again this Tuesday, January 31st, 2023. Bill, thanks for coming back on Liberty and Finance.
Thanks for having me back, Dunnigan.
Whenever we have you on, our audience goes berserk because they are so hungry for someone who's got their boots on the ground and their head on straight and calls it like they see it. That's a scarce commodity these days. It shouldn't be. That's what men should do and all of us should do. But you do it, and people are starving for that, and they're very grateful for your presence here. So thanks for being such a solid reference point that people can lean on in times of confusion. And believe, I know you know how much confusion is spun out there in the media. So people are looking for something real, and you bring that. So thank you for that. Our viewers really appreciate that. And I'll give you a chance at the end. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's amazing that people are starving for like normal common sense.
Yeah. That's absolutely true. And it's refreshing when I know you are a gold and silver broker for Miles Franklin MMI, and it's refreshing when you talk to clients who see things straight and they see what's going on. Their eyes are open and they're taking action to take care of business for their families. So you get a chance to relate with people like that every week, I'm sure, as do I. I want to talk to you today about something you talked about with Greg Hunter last week, which was the shrinking money supply. I won't even call it a money supply, the shrinking currency supply and credit supply in our country, the M2. And first of all, if you could just give people who might not have heard the term before a real quick understanding of the difference between M1 and M2, you know, base money, and then the next level of expansion of that, why that's important, and specifically why the unusual in recent decades shrinking of the currency supply and credit supply is going to be, you know, cataclysmic to the unwinding of this Ponzi scheme that's been building up for four decades.
Well, understand that any Ponzi scheme needs new, fresh money continually in order to pay back past investors. And that's really what the Western financial world is a Ponzi scheme. If you have read G. Edward Griffin's book, The Creature from Jekyll Isle, that's pretty much a playbook, and they've really gone by that. What they've done is they've gotten the Western world completely indebted to levels that have never been seen, no matter how you look at it, total amount, ratio, whether it be debt to GDP, debt to assets. The amount of debt outstanding now, and I've talked about this for quite a few years now, the debt outstanding is not payable. So what they've done is they've gotten the system totally indebted to a point where it's not payable. They've raised interest rates over the last 12, 15 months harder and faster than any other tightening cycle going back to 1982. And of course, that's when interest rates originally peaked. Now there's one more piece to the puzzle, and that's the money supply itself is shrinking. And if you go back, I don't think there's any time in history that the money supply has shrunk 5% over a 15-month period of time. I don't believe there's any, we even had any period of time over 12 months where the money supply was actually down. It's always risen. So what's happening now, a 5% pullback in the money supply, what that's going to do is that's going to starve the Ponzi scheme. And it will create a debt default domino series, if you will.
That unwinding of the Ponzi scheme, can you help people understand why that can happen? This idea of you expand and expand based on people buying in based on confidence in the layer that was already in there. And then when you start to have sort of that bottom of the pyramid pulled out, what that does to the whole pyramid.
Well, I guess think of it like an old car or even a new car. I'll talk about a carburetor. Think about it as a car that you're cranking the carburetor down so that less and less fuel gets to the engine. And what's going to happen is the engine is going to slow, and at some point the engine is going to stop as the fuel does not make it to the cylinders. So just understand that money supply is what allows has allowed the financial system to blow up the way it has. You know, they cranked money supply for years and years. We did see a big inflationary event, and typically what happens is when they goose the money supply too hard or too fast, you get some inflation. And yeah, we did, you know, we've seen massive inflation across the board over the last couple of years. Now money supply is shrinking. And, you know, I suggested probably, 6 months back that the next big event is going to be a deflationary event. And in my thought process there is the deflationary event is going to be debt that liquidates, debt that defaults. And just understand that all the big financial, the money center banks, the brokers, the insurance companies, they all owe each other. They're all own derivatives from each other. And the way I described it on Greg's interview, it's one giant financial STD where everyone is infected. And all you're going to need is one large institution to become upside down and not be able to pay, not be able to perform on their derivatives. And that will spread like wildfire. And I don't imagine it'll take more than 48 to 72 hours until everything comes down once the first major entity collapses and defaults.
When you talk about this deflationary event, people are talking about that in many different venues. Another one is about foreign U.S. bondholders repatriating, sending dollars back here with the whole BRICS nation, a pivot away from the dollar. Another one is real estate, because that's another market that's been inflated by these artificially low interest rate environment for the past several decades. We heard a statistic very recently here that in December, one of the largest home builder companies in the United States reported a 68% cancellation rate. So out of every 100 home starts, now there's only 32 that are still proceeding forward. So can you talk to us about the real world implications of this spiraling down, this winding down of these various asset classes?
Right. And it's across the board. I mean, interest rates have gone up. So the bond market has deflated. When interest rates go up, bond prices go down. You've seen a lot of stocks come down pretty hard in value. And you've also seen in the real estate market, and it doesn't matter whether it's single family homes, commercial, industrial, because interest rates have gone up, the amount of activity has declined drastically. And if you're a student of finance, you'll know that price always follows volume, and volume has collapsed. There's one other thing that you didn't mention there. I think it was back in December. There was a hedge fund, and I can't remember offhand now who it was, but there was a hedge fund, or maybe it was a ETF, I'm not sure. But what they did was they gated the redemptions. They had massive redemptions and could not, they didn't have the capital to do it. So what they've done is, I think they've only given back investors maybe 10% of their money, and something like 40 or 50% has already been requested to exit, and they're stuck. Very reminiscent of 2008, 2009, when they started to gate the money markets.
Yeah, people need to understand this, what you're talking about. Let's zoom into that for a moment. Gating, it's also called capital restrictions. There's other terms that have applied to that. But we received a informational friendly card in the mail from Capital One about 3 years ago about an online high yield checking account we had with them, or a savings account. And it said, hey, for your safety and for the protection of your account and for some other reasons, we will be implementing daily transfer or withdrawal limits at a time of our choosing and an amount that we determine is necessary. And it's for your safety and protection and convenience, and on it went. And we closed that account like that and got the money out of there. So if people haven't heard about these capital controls, can you describe how they can impact ordinary people who are trying to get their life, you know, trying to do what they need to do with their funds?
Well, I mean, it's pretty simple. If you think you have a balance, you know, pick a figure, $100,000, and the account becomes gated, you might only be able to get $5,000 or $10,000 of it out. It may take you, if they stay solvent, it may take you 2 years, 3 years, or more to get all your money out. So what they're doing is they're making your capital illiquid, and that's one of the reasons that we've spoken for so long regarding get out of the system. You don't want intermediaries between you and your money. I mean, what good is your money if you can't get to it and you can't use it? It's worthless.
We did an interview with an expert from the banking industry a few years ago entitled "Nothing in the Bank is Yours." And we talked about the Dodd-Frank Act of 2010 and the changes that it wrought. Do you want to highlight some of the key points of that new law that's in effect right now that most people aren't even aware of?
Yeah, the biggest point is that when you deposit, and I'm using the word deposit because that's what people think they're doing. When you deposit money into the bank, you're not depositing it. What you're doing is you're lending the bank your money, and it becomes their money, because they've borrowed it, and it is then on the bank's balance sheet. Should the bank get into trouble, it's not your money, it's their money, and that becomes part of the bankruptcy proceeding. So just understand that when you put money or give money to your bank, it's no longer yours, it's theirs for your benefit. And as long as times are good, you'll be able to get to it, and when times are not good, you won't.
Yeah, and you mentioned there you'll be able to get to it, but what that means, there may be restrictions, gating or capital controls or whatever, and what good is it? That's one of the big fears that people have about the looming prospect of a central bank digital currency, CBDCs, is that there is no not being in the bank then. Everything is in the system. You can't pull anything out of the system. But how different is that from a bank that won't give you what's yours?
I guess the only difference is banks at this point can't tell you, you did an interview with Dunnigan Kaiser, so your account is shut off. In a CBDC, central bank digital currency, basically the government can shut you off. So, you know, based upon anything, based upon your beliefs, based upon what websites you go to, based upon what you say, based upon anything they say. So in essence, you know, like we said before, that money's not your money.
And people need to understand that the bank isn't just holding it on your behalf. They've lent it out, and sometimes at much more risky things than you would ever have considered prudent for your household. And okay, so there's 2 points. Let's talk about that, and let's talk about, oh, but I shouldn't have to worry because the FDIC's got my back, right? So first, let's talk about that first one, that the, what the bank is doing with your quote-unquote money that you loaned them without your knowledge.
Well, there's no telling. I mean, you'd have to look at the bank's loan portfolio to see how and where they've lent the money. But understand that the bubbles that have been created via the use of debt. Well, where did that debt come from? It came from the banking system. So, in the instance of a home, a home that was 20 years ago, 150 or 200,000, now it's $500,000, $700,000. The bank's lending on that, and they may only require a 5% deposit. So one teeny tiny hiccup wipes out the equity, and you've got homeowners like they've done in the past. You've got homeowners that will just walk away from the house, and the bank is stuck. You know, they've lost whatever they've lent. And that obviously affects their bottom line. It affects their balance sheet because it is a loss.
When you mentioned the unwinding of the sort of this derivative Ponzi scheme that can be triggered by something like the shrinking of the M2 money supply, which is where we started this, when you start pulling the bottom out, you know, you're draining the tub and there's nothing to support this froth that's been built on top of that. That can affect many different markets. There's a question here about correlations between these markets and how we can anticipate that they may move. Chris H. says, historically, stock market drops have led to metals price drops. With calls for a drop in the stock market of up to 50%, would it be different or the same for metals this time, and why?
First off, I'll just say it doesn't matter because you own metals, presumably. I mean, there are some people who own metal because they want to make money. They want to buy gold at $1,500 and sell it at $2,000 or sell it at $2,500. The real reason to own metal is for when the system actually fails. Understand that all currencies on the planet today are fiat. They're backed by nothing, which means they're actually worth nothing. When the system does fail and you own gold or you own silver, you own real money. Basically, you own a piece of all the real marbles on the planet. You will enter the next system with capital when the vast majority will enter the system with nothing.
I've had multiple clients, not most, because most who call, they've already got their thought process straight on this, and they know exactly what you just said is the fact that having real assets is the name of the game when trust is being lost in many, many quarters. But there are some people who actually use the following phrase. If the system were to collapse, if I buy metals and I have them, how would I get rid of them? Can you talk to us about why even thinking of it in that manner, about wanting to know how you're going to get rid of metals, is probably shows you don't understand the role that they actually play in your family's financial future.
Exactly. Once the system comes down, the thought process of, oh my gosh, how am I going to sell my metals and get dollars? Well, you won't want dollars because dollars won't be spending. The fact is, if you own gold or if you own silver, you already have money, and you have the money that new monies are going to be based off of. So worrying about how you're going to get rid of metal is kind of a really ridiculous thought process, because you will have people banging your door down, hopefully not armed to steal your gold or silver, but you'll have people banging your door down wanting money, wanting gold, wanting silver for a product, whether it be chickens and eggs or somebody's car or a piece of property or whatever. You're going to have people wanting to liquidate assets for money. That money is gold and silver.
That's the part that most people have just not experienced. Our grandparents, our great grandparents, everybody from the beginning of time until about two generations ago understood exactly, because that was everyone's experience for their entire life. We're in this grand modern experiment that's been perpetrated on everyone, and people have actually forgotten or never learned what real money is. But that will come back.
I've got one other point. Go back to the Depression and understand that, you know, when banks failed, you lost your money. But if you had gold, if you had silver, you had, you know, if you had it in your possession, if it was not in the banking system, you had money. You had capital that you could bottom fish. Remember, the stock market dropped 89% over the whatever it was, the 3 or 4 years. You had capital that you were able to step up and buy assets with. You had money. And not only that, they did devalue the dollar versus gold from $20.67 to $35. So not only did you have money, but that money went up in purchasing power.
That's another thing that I make a point of that kind of is a real aha moment when people ask me that question, because I tell them that when I was a kid and we were on a tour of the Gulf of Mexico coast of Texas in 1968, about there was a gas price war and gas was going for 19.9 per gallon, which is two dimes. And those same two dimes from back then, if they had 90% silver in them now, could still buy you a gallon of gas. So silver has held its own. It still has the same potency, the same purchasing power, the same value. It brought it into the future across all these decades and all these wars and all this inflation and deflation and everything. It just came, brought it all through, and that was what it can do. I also had a coworker whose family in India survived for generations when his grandfather passed away unexpectedly, and his grandma was able to keep the family together and keep their household going with the amount of the gold that they had in their family safe in the home. So any comments from you on metal holding its own through convulsive times, or holding your family together with solid things, which you've already talked on before?
Yeah, I mean, the worse things get, the more demand there will be for gold and silver. Your question before was, okay, if the stock market drops 50%, will gold and silver get hit? Well, yeah, during times where, quote, the powers that be, have control, yeah, they're able to knock the prices down on COMEX. What we're talking about here, we're not talking about a cyclical event. This is a secular event. This is an event that is a multi-generational event. It's the change of a currency system. I mean, Bretton Woods, too, now is pretty much dead because Saudi Arabia is going to take other currencies other than dollars. So it's no longer king dollar. Just understand that the worse things get and the more out of control the system becomes, the more gold and silver will be in demand, because they cannot bankrupt, they cannot default in a system that is defaulting.
Now, you just stated about how there will be increasing demand for precious metals as real assets in the failing market of a currency. There's a question to the opposite here, and see if you can help people clarify and realize why this is different. Greg Austin says, as the CPI ramps up, so should the price of gold and silver. But what happens to precious metals prices when deflation pulls currency out of the system? That's kind of where you started us off today, was the M2 money supply decreasing. How does that impact metals, or do they behave differently than all other assets?
Well, first off, understand that yes, gold and silver generally do well during inflation because the currency itself is devaluing. On the other hand, in a outright deflation, what that means is you're going through a period of bankruptcy, you're going through a period of default. And as I mentioned before, the real reason you want to own gold and silver is because they are the only monies on the planet that cannot default, they cannot bankrupt. So you're going to have people that are looking to become liquid because they've lost their liquidity in the paper system. They're going to be selling assets for gold and for silver. And what that will do is that capital from assets being sold for the purchase of gold and silver, that's going to explode the prices of gold and silver to levels at this point, you know, unthought of, because they can't bankrupt. That's the bottom line. Fear capital is going to end up in gold and in silver, because once you have gold and silver, as long as it's you know, in a safe location, it's where it's you don't have any more fear once you're in cash. And that's what gold and silver really are. They are they're cash. And think about this. Throughout history, where was the best place to be when credit cycles busted? The answer was cash. The thing is, prior to 1933, cash worldwide was gold and was silver. And from 1933 on, then these currencies became derivatized, if you will, off of gold and silver. The current money system that's fiat is basically a bastardization of real money, gold and silver. Those used to be the roots, and now there's no connection whatsoever, to the point where gold and silver are the anti-paper currencies. They're the exact opposite of paper currencies.
What about, and we talked about this earlier, what about people who think, oh, my deposits, which aren't really deposits, they're loans, in the bank are fully protected by the FDIC, so I've got nothing to worry about?
I guess my first thought is, the vaccines were safe and effective, weren't they? They told you that, and they've told you FDIC's got you covered. I don't know exactly what the number is, but I think it's like a quarter of 1 cent for every $100 is what the FDIC actually has in reserves. And then you'll hear, oh, well, the FDIC can borrow from the government, from the Treasury. Well, okay, so FDIC can borrow from the Treasury, but the Treasury is insolvent. So what's your point? The bottom line is, they would have to print dollars to oblivion to make good on the accounts themselves. And you'd see a dollar, today's dollar, at less than, with purchasing power of less than 10 cents on today's dollar.
We've got a question that I think a lot of our viewers and myself are all going to be curious about, and it has to do with how you got into this arena in the first place. Business Pins asked, Bill, what inspired you to become a precious metals investor, or what inspired you to become a contrarian at least?
It's an interesting question, and it goes back to the very first class I had in college was Economics 101. The first book I opened was Economics 101, and on the very first page, and I remember exactly where it was at the bottom of the first page, and it ran into the back of, you know, to page two, and it said, we don't, and I think this was a Keynes book, I'm not sure, it said, we don't know why the Great Depression happened, but we do know it can never happen again. And when I read that, I was like, this is stupid. And it set me off on a mission to find out what really happened in the Depression. And I just, you know, from there, just researched and understood, came to a basic understanding that it was a credit event. So I learned more about credit. When I was 14 years old, I knew I wanted to be a stockbroker. And I was a broker for 23 years, a branch manager for 12. And along the way, early in my career, probably during the first or second year, there was a guy at, and he's passed away now, he passed away a long time ago. There was a guy at Merrill Lynch, his name was Stan Salvixson. And Stan Salvixson was truly an Austrian logical economist. And basically from there, I dug and every avenue that I chased ended up with gold. So probably in the mid late 80s, I became interested in gold. And the more I got interested in gold, I spoke with people in the industry. One of my very best friends was Harry Bingham. He was, I met Harry in 1990 or 1991. He was the manager for Van Eck of the International Investors Fund, which this is a little bit of trivia for you. International Investors in 1979, 1980 became the very first billion-dollar fund on the planet. So, you know, I met John Van Eck. I mean, I met a lot of people in the gold business and just went from there. But it all started my trek that pointed me to gold was digging after that very first page of the very first book of my college economics course.
I'm going to not let you off the hook so easily there, because that's a very important point. The fact that something that was just presented to the students in general as a statement that on its face makes absolutely no sense. If you actually are a thinking person, you think about it, but it went right by 99.9% of everybody else, but you saw it differently. You said that makes no sense. It's a grave concern of mine, and I'm sure of yours right now, is that when you look at the actions that are being taken by, whether it's the federal government, whether it's international bodies, whether it's whatever, the story that they're using to defend that or to justify that or to rationalize that makes no sense if you really think about it. What are you seeing that makes no sense to you in the last 3 years? And what do you think about the fact that if the majority of the governments of the world went along with this stuff, or that the people don't seem to be thinking critically about it, certainly the major newscasters just read the story as though it made sense, and it leaves your mouth dropping open to wondering, why aren't you asking this? Why aren't you asking this? Why aren't you asking this? What do you think of the state of thought in our country and in our world right now, and how well it's going to protect people as yours protected you by getting you to alert to something that made no sense?
Well, the vast majority believe the bullshit. I mean, you asked me, you know, what are the things? How about the word everything, pretty much? I mean, you have to go to alt media to get truth. You cannot go to any media source, you know, mainstream media source. It's bullshit. You get announcements out of governments. It's all bullshit. Going back to where we were before, my God's gift to me, my talent, is I'm able to sniff out bullshit pretty quickly. And I mean, think about this, Dunnigan. If this was the year 2000, before 9/11, because, I mean, most people understand that that's not what the official narrative was. So let's go back before that. Go back to the year 2000. If all of a sudden you woke up in the morning and went out into today's world, looked at the TV, read a newspaper, if you could find one, got online, read the news stories from Drudge Report, blah, 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 et cetera, you would be like, what happened? It would be completely, completely unbelievable. You'd probably go out of your mind, freaked out. I know I would wake up probably more pissed off than I am now, because this has been a drip, 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 drip. But if you woke up and all of a sudden you look at today's world, you'd be like, you know, it's a dream. I mean, think about this. You have city councils that are mandating that they put tampon dispensers in men's bathrooms. It's ridiculous. Everything's ridiculous.
We have some questions from viewers who have already decided that they're going to accumulate real assets, such as precious metals, and they're wanting to think about the trade-offs of holding it personally. And you touched briefly on that earlier in this conversation about protecting your own stuff and having your own assets with nothing between you and your assets versus storing some of it in a depository. One of these questions is very specific, and if you want to address the specific question, that's fine, but if you want to talk in general about a strategy of alt storage, Low Blood Pressure says, what do you think of the Texas Bullion Depository? Is it free from federal confiscation? lot to unpack in that question, but before we get to the specifics, or if you want to hit it first, that's fine. What about storage in general?
As far as the Texas Depository, it's fairly new. It's only, what, 2 years old, 3 years old, something like that. I know very little about it. I would suspect, and I have no way of knowing, but I would suspect that the state of Texas would prevent federal agents from coming in. I mean, if we got to that point, you're probably looking at a fracturing of the country. And I think Texas would stand up for Texas, but I have no proof or knowledge that that's fact. As far as storage is concerned, I tell everybody that you should have at least one bag of junk silver on hand per person in your household. Gold is easily stored. I mean, you could store $1 million in a couple shoeboxes and, you know, bury them, hide them, whatever. As far as silver is the better buy because of the ratio, the problem is storage. So if you got $1 million or 5 million or whatever, you know, you probably do want to store. You may want to store in two places or three places, diversify your risk. I mean, there's really no guarantee, because you could have all that silver at your home and, you know, your home is invaded. Somebody sticks a gun to your wife or your children's head, and you're going to give them the metal. So you want to diversify where you hold it, but you want as little between you and your metal as possible. And, you know, the nature of the beast is, if you're going to store, you have to store at an institution, but make sure it's a non-bank institution.
Do you have any insight into people's concerns about, because the other thing was the word confiscation in there. People are concerned about the potential for confiscation. You already clarified what happened with gold in 1933. Some people say it's not proper to actually call that confiscation because people were compensated in dollars that were about to be devalued.
At $20.67. And then, you know, just a month or two, few months later, they raised it to 35. So it was a 70, you know, it was a 70% move.
So, where we're going with that was, what about current and future risks of government confiscation of precious metals? People are concerned about confiscating a lot of things: their money in the bank, their weapons, their potentially their precious metals. What are your thoughts, and what do you? And I know that nobody has a crystal ball, but what are your leanings based on your experience about that topic?
I don't think that silver will be confiscated. However, that's why you would want to own either junk silver or silver eagles. They're U.S. mint lineage. It would be harder to confiscate U.S. mint lineage than it would be bars or kilos or rounds or maples or Krugerrands or what have you. As for gold, yeah, there very well may be a confiscation, and it's the same thing. You want either eagles or pre-1933 gold. They both have U.S. mint lineage. And as the law reads today, pre-1933 gold is considered a collectible. And if you go back to the year 2010, when gold was $1,000 an ounce, and there was fear that Obama was going to start a confiscation, you were able to sell back MS-63 Liberties for $1,800 and turn around and buy Gold Eagles for $1,100. What I'm getting at is, under current law, they're collectibles. Can they change the law? Yeah, they can do anything they want. But as it stands right now, if you're worried about confiscation, then you should be looking at pre-1933 gold.
You've devoted, I guess, pretty much the most recent decades of your professional life and your passion to helping get this word out, getting people awakened so that they can take preventative action and protect their families. That's what our channel's been here for all along as well. But how well can we accomplish that? Are there any tips on how to do that more effectively? Joe Nip asks, for 15 plus years, I've been trying to convince my family and friends of her precious metal story. Few are buying it, even fewer are buying. Are you having the same troubles with your family and friends?
I guess I would just start off by, welcome to the party, pal. Yeah, no, it's been difficult. And I've had this question, it's funny you asked that. I've had this question three or four times in the last maybe week to 10 days. And my suggestion, my strategy, when I come across somebody who just completely doesn't get it, I ask them, is the U.S. government bankrupt? And 95% of the people will say, well, of course they are, but it doesn't matter. And then my next question would be, would you accept an IOU from someone, your neighbor, whoever, that you knew for a fact was bankrupt? And the answer is always no. Well, that's exactly what you're doing with dollars. Dollars are IOUs. They're IOUs issued by a bankrupt entity. And then go from there. We're so late in the game now. If they haven't understood in the last 15 years and you've been trying, that those people are not ever going to understand until they wake up one morning. They have no capital and there's no food in the store and that the system's down.
We've got a lot of debt of gratitude to you for all the no-nonsense thoughts you've shared with people throughout the years. Helen Kessler says, as a fellow Texan, I really like Bill. We're no-nonsense out here. And so thank you for all that you've done and shared of your wisdom and your experience during those last several decades. People want to know how they can follow you, how they can keep up with you, how they can continue to benefit from your awarenesses. And you've got a new announcement, I understand.
Yeah, I kind of took a three-month sabbatical, if you will. Jim and I went our separate ways back in October. I had been writing, I didn't even realize it had been this long. I'd been writing since 2007. So I really wrote and was, you know, pedal to the metal for 15 years. So my gas tank was kind of empty. A little bit after the first of the year, I, you know, felt a little more energy, a little more oomph. So I believe tomorrow, I'm not positive, but I believe as of tomorrow, February 1st, I will have my own website. It'll be billholter.com. There will be a way to reach me through the website. And I put this out there. My email, if you have questions, is bholter@hotmail.com.
Well, we're looking forward, as are our viewers, to seeing your new website, billholter.com. So we'll check that out on February 1st and later. And always grateful for your recurring visits here on Liberty and Finance. There's something that really clicks between your background, your attitude, your knowledge, the whole approach that you bring, and the sort of feet on the ground, heads up attitude of our subscribers who have been with us since 2013 as reluctant preppers trying to be aware and prepared, because that's what you're talking about, is awareness and preparedness of many different kinds. There's so much more. I wanted to talk with you more about real estate and so on. We'll have to have you back again soon, and we look forward to that. And just, Bill, always grateful for your joining us here on Liberty and Finance. And if you have any parting thoughts for our viewers?
I guess I would just say, do the best you can. That's all you can do.
Bill, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Dunnigan.
Miles Franklin Precious Metals is one of America's oldest and most trusted bullion dealers. Miles Franklin is A-plus rated and accredited by the Better Business Bureau, licensed and bonded, and has zero complaints ever registered. Here at Liberty and Finance, we are licensed brokers with Miles Franklin. To order, simply call us, discuss your needs, and we can let you know our live inventory, prices, and availability, and lock in your order over the phone. Once your order is locked, the price is held for you regardless of market fluctuations, and the metals are reserved for you awaiting your settled payment. Within one business day of ordering, you will receive an email invoice detailing the order and payment instructions. Miles Franklin accepts payments by bank wire, ACH or electronic check, money order, check mailed priority mail, and cryptocurrency. The fastest forms of payment are bank wire and cryptocurrency. Upon settled payment, metals will ship out within 3 to 5 business days. You will receive tracking information via email. Domestic shipping charges are $15 for any order under 500 ounces of silver or 10 ounces of gold. For orders larger than that, domestic shipping is free. The package will be boxed, fully insured, and labeled discreetly, with no indication of the contents inside. For your privacy, the name Miles Franklin will not even be on the package. To talk to myself, Kaiser, my brother Elijah, or my father Dunnigan, call 1-888-81-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-815-4237.